For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. He does not make money off the site, but he does need money in order to run the site. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site. It is June 30th. We are on page 412 in Parshas Yisro, at the very end of the Aseres HaDibros, very end of the Ten Commandments, the last one. We read it last time. It's Pasuk Yudal, verse 14. We'll read it again. Lo sachmo beis reyecha. You will not desire or covet the house of your friend. Lo sachmo eishes reyecha. You shall not desire or covet the wife of your friend. Ve'avdo va'amaso v'shoro v'chamoro, and his slave and his maid and his bull and his donkey. V'chol asher lo reyecha, and all that your friend has. Here we have a commandment that both includes a practical, specific action, and in addition to that, an emotion, a feeling. So, which leads us, of course, to the discussion of how one can be commanded to control a particular emotion. First, let's discuss what the specific practical action that is being prohibited over here. To steal something, you take somebody's item and walk off with it. That's stealing. If there's an item that is not for sale, and a person takes it from the owner and pays for it, so it's not technically stealing, because the owner has not lost any money. I'm talking about paying full price. The owner has not lost any money. And since the owner hasn't lost any money, assuming there's another one in existence, the owner can go buy it, because this is what it's worth. If there's no other one in existence, the owner still has the same amount of money as he did before. His net worth hasn't changed. Even if you take something which is extremely expensive, but you pay for it in cash, and the owner has the same amount of money he did before. But if it's not for sale, obviously, you're not allowed to do that. What prohibition does that fall under? That falls under lo sachmod, which is do not covet, which means, in this understanding, it means not to take something that belongs to somebody else, even though you're going to pay for it, if the item is not for sale. That's the specific action that is being prohibited here in this verse. More broadly, though, we understand that one is not allowed to, as the English translation says here, one is not allowed to covet, which means I cannot have interest in something that you have. So, what does that mean? Can I walk into a store when there's a store? Everything in the store is owned by the store owner. So it's their items. And I walk in and I see an item that I want. So am I violating the prohibition of lo sachmod, of do not covet, because I am coveting. I want something that currently belongs to somebody else. So obviously I'm not violating the law. Why not?
You haven't taken anything. The purpose is to sell it.
Yeah,
to sell it to somebody who wants it.
Okay, so
it's for sale.
So the fact that it's for sale, we're suggesting now, affects this prohibition. So in other words, when it says you shall not covet, it means you shall not covet something
That's not for sale.
Rabbi, does it go as far as an individual being, concerned, basically about envious?
Well,
of another individual who, for instance, his business has exceeded.
Yeah.
And even though you don't do anything, you may envy that.
Okay. So is this a general prohibition against envy?
Yes.
Or something different? That's what we're trying to work out over here.
Yes.
Reading the whole rest of it, it appears to be a prohibition against one's personal possessions.
Okay. So let's continue in this line of reasoning before we get to Herman's point. So why is it that if it's for sale, that it would not be included in this prohibition? The Torah doesn't say except when it's for sale. Even though you are correct, because it's for sale, it's not included. But why not? What's the difference between something that's for sale and something that's not for sale?
A great deal of difference.
Yeah. What's the difference?
You may be admirable of something that is extremely, in a museum, that's extremely expensive and billions of dollars, and you say, that would be nice to have in my house.
So have you violated this prohibition? If you think to yourself,
I think so.
I wish I had that exhibit in my living room.
No.
You say not?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, why not?
Well, I read commentary somewhere that if it's something totally out of your possibility, then
okay,
doesn't.
Okay.
Like
so your
peasant doesn't envy the prince.
Oh well, Herman, then what do you do? Let's see. Okay, all right. So again, we're gonna move in that direction. But let's first. I want to get this point clear. What is the difference? Why is there a difference between something that is for sale and something that is not for sale? At the end of the day, it's something that is owned by somebody else.
Or does the coveting transcend that by saying that we don't have enough emunah HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who knows what we need and what's good for us? That we're coveting something that really is not for us to have.
Okay, so you are cutting to the heart of the issue of coveting, which when I covet, what I'm saying is that what Hashem has given me is insufficient. That's what I'm saying. Otherwise, I wouldn't covet. I am essentially rejecting the lot that Hashem has given me. Okay. But again, so why is it different if there's something that's for sale? So Dr. Faria is suggesting that the difference is that the owner's intention when it's for sale is that I could have it, provided I pay for it. And therefore, it's not coveting. What about something that I'm hoping you'll give me as a gift? I don't have the money to buy it, but I'm hoping you'll give it to me as a gift. So I put on my best puppy face and I show that I really, really want it. And you notice, and then you give it to me. So have I violated the prohibition against coveting? Say yes. The point of coveting is I want something that I cannot have. That's the prohibition of coveting. I can want something that I can have. I'm allowed to want something that I can have. For example, let's say I own a candy bar and I know I shouldn't eat it because it's not good for my health, but I want it really badly. So am I violating any prohibition because I really want to eat that candy bar? It's my candy bar. So of course I'm not violating anything. I could eat it if I wanted to. I'm just desirous of it, and I'm controlling myself. If I want something that I cannot have because it is owned by somebody else, I should add that, because there are other things that I can't have that have nothing to do with being owned by somebody else. Let's say I want a cheeseburger. So the reason why I can't have it is not because it's owned by somebody else, it's because it's not kosher. But if I want something that the reason why I cannot have it is because it's owned by somebody else, then if I desire that, I am coveting. If
it is not for sale.
Well, because then I can have it. See, the difference over there is because, as you pointed out, the owner's intention is for someone else to purchase it, then it's something which I can theoretically have.
Right.
I may not want to spend the money on it. I may want it for free, but it's something which I could theoretically have, and therefore it's not coveting.
If you're coveting, it's not only owned by somebody else, but it's not for sale.
It's something which I cannot have, which is beyond my ability to get, because it is owned by somebody else. So what I mean to say is this. Let's say I really, really, really want something that is ownerless. It's absolutely ownerless. Its location happens to be in the North Pole. So I can't get my hands on it. But I really want it. So I don't violate this prohibition because it's not owned by anybody. The reason I can't get it is because it's too far away. It's not accessible to me. But I'm not coveting something. It's I want something that I cannot have, and the reason I cannot have it is because it's owned by somebody else. That is coveting.
I have two things I want to ask. Number one is the merchant who has something that he wants to sell. So he's putting it out there for someone to desire it, to want it. Is he causing that person to sin because he wants to cop?
Okay, so you're bringing up a good point. The answer is it's not this prohibition, because this prohibition is only if I want something that I cannot have. If you're putting it up for sale, it means I could have it if I pay for it. In the example we mentioned before of the actual act of the prohibition of osakmod would be for me that you have something which is not for sale and I put the money down and take it. So since it's something which really I cannot have because you're not putting it up for sale, then I'm coveting, even if I leave money for it.
Yeah, but suppose the person wants it but can't afford to buy it.
So wanting it but cannot afford to buy it does not necessarily make it the prohibition of coveting, because it's for sale. It's something which the owner is willing to give up for a price. Even if I can't afford that price, but I really, really, really want it, it's not necessarily this prohibition. Because the reason I can't have it is not because it belongs to somebody else. The reason I can't have it is because I don't have the money to pay for it. But the person is willing to let go of it. The person is saying, if you want it, you can have it. You just have to pay for it. Which is why, if there is something that is for sale, and I really want it, I go into the bakery, and there's this delicious cookie that looks really good, but I don't want to pay for it. I don't have any money to pay for it. And I put on that puppy face, and the owner of the bakery says, oh, what a cute little boy, and hands the cookie over. So the cookie is for sale. And therefore, it's not necessarily the prohibition of coveting. But if there's something that is not for sale, that's where you get into this problem.
Let's say somebody hasn't eaten in days and they're starving and they're hungry. And they see somebody eating a sandwich,
mm-hmm.
and they really would like to have that sandwich. It's not for sale. He's not going to take it.
Okay, good.
But he's coveting that.
Okay. So here we get into the difference between really what Herman mentioned before, between envy and coveting. You see, envy, jealousy, is not a good character trait. We know that. One should not be jealous of somebody else. We all know that we are jealous of other people. That's a natural human trait, and it's one of those things which all of us need to struggle with and control and try to beat and try to learn not to be jealous and not to be envious. It's one of those things which we struggle with our entire lives. But being jealous or envious and coveting are still slightly different, because I can be envious of something which is not an object. I can be envious of a person's intelligence. I can be envious of a person's beauty. I can be envious of a person's relationship. But it's not that I want. It's not something I can take for myself. It's not something. It's not an item that I can take away from that person's possession and put into my possession. And therefore, it's not technically this prohibition. And so, you mentioned before, so an owner of an object puts an object up for sale and makes it look glamorous and glittery and everybody wants it, and you're the owner of the object, the storekeeper or whatever it is making people very interested in an item, it may not be the best thing for people to want things, but it's not necessarily this prohibition. This prohibition is when there's something that is not for sale, it's not mine, it belongs to you, but I want it. And that's where we get into the problem. Now what about, and I'll take another question in a minute, what about you own this unbelievable donkey. This donkey, it's the latest model donkey.
Talking donkey.
Talking donkey, okay. I really, really want it. I really want it, but it's not for sale. Now, can I go to you and try to convince you to sell it? It's not for sale, but I want to convince you to sell it. So I thought offering you money for it. Have I violated a prohibition of lo sachmod, of coveting? And the answer is no, and the reason why no is because I am exploring ways of getting it in a legal, proper manner.
Right.
That's not coveting. Coveting is when there is no legal, proper manner to get it. It is off limits, and I still desire it. I want it. That's where we get into the issue of lo sachmod. But you did bring up before, and we'll get to your question in a second, you did bring up before, what about a person who hasn't eaten in days? And they come and now they're starving and they need food. So how can they not desire or covet? So over there, again, we have a similar situation. If the person is desiring something which is off limits to them, so that may be a situation where you can't blame him, because he hasn't eaten in days, so what do you expect? Of course he's going to desire food that belongs to somebody else. But if it's something which he cannot get in a legal, normal manner, then it would be this prohibition. Whereas, if the person is trying to figure out a way of getting it legally, even by begging, and saying, listen, I haven't eaten in days, I really, really need to eat, can you spare us some food? So, that is permitted because he's trying to get it in the legal, proper manner. Once the person he's trying to get it from says, I am not giving it to you, no matter what, you're not going to have this, I'm keeping it for myself, that's where we get into the issue of lo sachmod. Again, in that case, I don't know if we're going to blame the guy, he hasn't eaten in days, but there is a difference between trying to get the person to give it to you in a legal manner versus desiring something which you cannot have. No, it could be in that case. There, I had a friend in high school who, if you bought a can of soda, and he wanted to take a drink of your soda, so he would go up to you, he would make a bracha of shahakal, and then he would go, it could be in that case the reason why there is a prohibition of lo sachmod is because she doesn't really want to give the cookie.
Yeah,
she's being guilted into it. She's being pressured into it.
Right.
It's not that she's all of a sudden had this incredible sense of compassion for her poor classmate who hasn't eaten cookies in months. You know, that's not what's going on over here. She's being pressured through peer pressure and social pressure to give it up. That's the problem of lo sachmod. But someone who's begging, there's no peer pressure, it's just saying, I haven't eaten, I need to eat. That's a different story. Right, right. Yeah.
You see the beauty of this, I said that this dibra compared, because you mentioned emotion. The other ones are very different. This really zooms in on the nature of human beings.
Okay, that's true. That's true. But it does mean, we have to understand now, so how can we be commanded to do this? If I really want something, I really want it. So I understand, I shouldn't want what belongs to somebody else, but I do want it. So I'm not acting upon it. I'm not trying to pressure the person, but I really want it. At night I dream about that car. Oh boy, that talking car. I really want it. So How can you expect me not to? I'm not acting upon it, but I'm a human being and I really want it.
But the whole purpose of the Torah is for us to prove ourselves.
So how do
this
we,
is a goal that you can work toward and maybe you'll reach that point.
So how do we do it?
Won't.
How does one do it? That's the question.
Okay,
there's no question the Torah expects us to govern our emotions.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question about it. There are two primary ways that the commentaries say here that one can master this. There's two primary ways of doing it. One is what Mrs. Stockman said before, which is to understand that what Hashem gives to each person is specific to that person. And if Hashem gave me what I have, and Hashem gave the other person what they have, then right now, maybe things will change later in life, but right now, that person is supposed to have the car, and I'm not supposed to have the car. This is not by chance, and it is not circumstance. This is what Hashem has decided is best for me right now, and best for that person right now. And really what, Dean, I think you said this before, this is really the point, which is that a person doesn't desire something that is completely out of their realm. The example given in the commentaries is that the pauper doesn't desire to marry the princess, even though the princess is beautiful and even though the princess has everything. But the pauper doesn't even think about that because it's so far out of his realm. He knows he has there's nothing to talk about over there. We Americans are a little desensitized to this because we've been fed since we were little about how everybody can change their station and the American dream and all that. But in previous generations, you were born into a certain station. That's the way you were your whole life. And no one ever thought that they could move along the social pyramid in a way that could move you up so dramatically. So it's off limits. It's not possible. I can't possibly have that, and therefore it's just out of the realm of possibility. And as really, Dini, as you mentioned before, if I'm in a museum and something costs billions of dollars, and it's not for sale, but it's a $1 billion thing, and I say I wish I had that in my living room. Well, I mean that's just a pipe dream. It's not a real desire. It's something which that's just living in Never Neverland. So that's also beyond the scope of this particular prohibition. This is when it's a real thing. I really want that thing in my living room. I am really thinking it's a possibility when it isn't. So when one can realize that anything that belongs to somebody else is really like the princess and I'm the pauper, that's what it's like because Hashem gave it to that person and it's set in stone. They have it and I don't. And that's the way it's going to be. So if a person can keep that idea in mind that what I have is what was given to me and what they have is what was given to them and it's not going to change, then a person can master this. The other thinking process that is used over here is that you have the mashal, the parable they say is, I think I've mentioned this to you before, you have the person who has a very great desire for whatever it is, and it's on the other side of the lake. The lake is frozen. It's the middle of the winter, it's the other side of the lake. And they've got this real desire, there's a hot dog on the other side of the lake, and I really want that hot dog. Mm-hmm. And the person just gets on the lake and starts running across the frozen lake to get that hot dog. And all they can think about is the hot dog. Oh, can't wait. And then all of a sudden they hear a crack. The beginning of a little crack. All of a sudden they stop short and all thoughts of the hot dog are gone. All they can think about now is the ice. I'm going to hightail it back the other way to get off of this ice as fast as possible. The fear drives the desire away because I'm scared. My own skin. Once I'm scared for my own life, that's it. The desire is gone. It's driven away. So a person can also deal with this particular prohibition by thinking about the fear of what happens if I violate the law of God. Here, it's one of the Ten Commandments. Hashem says it's not mine, it's His, and you can't have it. So I want it. So if a person realizes, yeah, I want it, but I'm treading on thin ice, literally treading on thin ice. If I go after that thing, I can literally fall through the ice and I'm a goner. The fear of what could happen will drive the desire away. This is more than just fear of punishment in the sense of, I'm not going to sin because I'm afraid of getting punished. That's true, that is one way of preventing sin. One way of preventing sin is to be afraid of the punishment. But here it's more than that. The fear of the punishment can drive away the actual desire for the item. And the desire here is the problem. So it is a very effective tool to help deal with desire and coveting when one should not covet. In all these cases, I'm not going to own it if I take it. If I take his ox, I'm not going to own it either. I'm a thief.
Right?
All these cases are, they're not for sale. There's no way for me to legally get it. I could take it forcibly, but it won't be mine. That's true for all these cases. So in all these cases, it's something which I can't have because it's his. And I want it anyway. That's where you get into this issue. Right? Right.
So it's a little bit in a different category that way. It could never be for sale.
Right. But again, I realize that this is a male-oriented discussion for right now. But if she's
not going after that.
No. I'm just pointing out to you. If she's single,
that's a different.
Right. But not interested in marrying me.
Yeah.
Right. That's different. Even though it's a bad desire to have. But it's not the same thing, because it's not that she belongs to somebody else.
Right.
That's why it's a different story.
Yeah, I understand that.
Right. So the Mishnah and Parakei Avos really fits here. Eza who has she, has some.
Yes. One who's happy with the law. Yeah. So that is the last of the Ten Commandments. Dina asked before if we could just make a comment about the relationship between the Ten Commandments, the Aseret HaDibros, and the 613 mitzvos. So I mentioned at the outset of the Aseret HaDibros that these ten are they're the springboard for all 613, and there are various works to show how all 613 can somehow be tied in to these 10, and that they are various categories that encompass the rest. That is a very tedious thing to do, to go work out all of them. Just as a general breakdown, we know there's a famous breakdown of the Ten Commandments, how the first five are Ben Adam Lamakom, between man and God, and the last five are Ben Adam Lachavero, between man and his fellow man. Don't steal, and don't murder, and adultery. Those are all between each other. Whereas, I am Hashem, your God. You shall not have any other gods. Shabbos, those are between us and Hashem. It is noteworthy, and this is pointed out by everybody, that honoring your parents goes in the first five, not in the last five. It is considered to be a mitzvah between ourselves and God, rather than ourselves and another, and our fellow man. Because the honoring of parents, it is not that the parents need our honor. It's that we need to honor them. And it is an issue for between us and Hashem, are we honoring properly or are we not honoring properly, God forbid. But it is not an issue of, do our parents deserve or need or require our honor. Whereas, when it comes to stealing, if I take something that belongs to you, then you don't have it. So it's definitely an issue between the two of us that is going on when there is theft also. Lo sachmon, also coveting, has to do with another person. So you have that breakdown, and the mitzvot of the Torah can be broken down in that manner as well, that some mitzvot are between man and God. Kosher. Kosher is between man and God. And some mitzvot are between man and the fellow man. Don't move the boundary between your properties. Well, that's clearly between man and his fellow man. Don't charge interest between man and fellow man. Another breakdown of mitzvos is some mitzvos are prohibitions and some are commandments. the Aseres Hadibros, although we call them commandments, but only one is a commandment. The other nine are prohibitions. Only the first one is a commandment. I am Hashem, your God. The other nine are actually prohibitions. We are not allowed to do this and not allowed to do that. Even though, for example, Shabbos has several aspects to it. There are parts of Shabbos that are prohibitive and some that require us to do something. But the main part of Shabbos that's discussed in the Aseres Hadibros is that of the prohibition of Shabbos. Although we talked about Zohar and Shomer, we talked about the difference between those two things when we talked about Shabbos. But overall, one can do it. One can fit in all the mitzvos into the Aseres Hadibros. It should also be noted, I'll get to your question in a moment, that and we mentioned this as well before, that there is another listing of this Aseres Hadibros when the Torah is repeated in Sefer Devarim. In Parashas Va'eschanan, the Aseres Hadibros are listed again. It's the same Aseres Hadibros, it's reporting the same incident, it just Moshe is saying it over again, and there are certain nuances that are changed over there from over here, which need to be understood why. In certain cases, both are true, that Hashem said both things, like in the case of Zohar and Shomer. So again, when we get over there, we'll have to discuss some of the nuances. Yeah?
I mean, if you took away these 10, then would there be 603 mitzvahs?
Yes. Yes. These 10 are part of the 613.
So even though we could fit all the
yes.
other ones into these categories, these are still part
yes.
of the 613.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Yeah. Yeah. Otherwise, there'd be 623. Right. And these are part of it. Yeah. Okay. Pasuk Tes Va, verse 15. V'chol ha'om roim es ha'kolos ve'es ha'lapidim. And all the nation saw the sounds and the fire, ve'es kol ha'shofar and the sound of the shofar, ve'es ha'har ashen and the mountain smoked or smoked up, whatever it should say over here, and the smoking mountain, v'yar ha'am v'yonu'u, and the people saw and they trembled, v'yandu me'rachok, and they stood from afar. This pasuk may be familiar to you because this is one of the 10 verses of Shofros, of Shofar, that is said in the Shemona Esrei on Rosh Hashanah. We have 10 verses of Melech, of kingship, and 10 of Zichronos, of remembrances, and 10 of Shofar. This is one of the ones of Shofar. Vayomru al Moshe, they said to Moshe, Daber ata imanu v'nishma, you speak to us and we will hear. Ve'al yedaber imanu Elokim, and Hashem should not speak to us, pen namus, lest we will die. Vayomru Moshe el ha'am, Moshe said to the nation, Al tira'u, do not be afraid, ki leva'avor nasos eschem boha Elokim, because God has come in order to elevate you. That's one reason. And in order that his fear should be on your faces, so you shall not sin. That's why he appeared to you. And the nation stood from afar. He approached the thick cloud. That there was God's presence. We'll pause here for the moment. The nation saw the sounds, the fire, etc. It was, as we mentioned when we talked about the beginning of the Aseres Hadibros, this was an awesome sight, a terrifying sight, with the mountain and the fire and the smoke and the thunder and the lightning, whatever else was going on. It was just a very, very, very frightening experience, and the people were frightened. It says they saw the sounds. This is literal. The Gemara itself points this out. That is something that is impossible. Normally you can't see sound, and they were able to see sound. They were able to see the sound whenever Hashem spoke, they were able to see it, not just hear it. Whatever that means. And you'll recall, we talked about how Zohar and Shamar were said simultaneously. We talked about that, how they were said simultaneously, and how that's something which normally a person cannot say two words at the same time, nor can a person decipher two sounds, two words simultaneously. Can't do that. And here they could. We talked about the difference between seeing and hearing, and we pointed out that that they each have an advantage. When one hears, one is able to build something through the hearing because it's done in a sequential way. Whereas seeing, you get the entire picture in one moment. Here they had both things at the same time. They had both the advantage of hearing and seeing in one package. And they were able to see the sounds. And they were terrified. The Gemara tells us that when each dibur, each utterance, came from Hashem, the people were literally blown away. They were blown back by the sound of Hashem. Picture the whole nation lined up in just ready to hear at the foot of Har Sinai, ready to hear what Hashem has to say. And as Hashem speaks, they are just blown backwards from the force, the impact of the sound of Hashem's voice, whatever that means. Hashem doesn't really have a voice, but whatever it is that they heard, they were blown backwards. The Gemara says they were moved backward. They moved back the length of their encampment, so that if the Jews' encampment was here, so they were moved back an entire length backwards. So you're talking about a couple of million people, and they took up whatever the area they took up, it was a large area that they took up in the wilderness, and when Hashem spoke, they were blown all the way back. And the Gemara says, their souls left them, which means they died. Because death is the process of the soul leaving the body. Remember that that's what death is. We are all a hybrid of a soul and a body, and death is the temporary state of the soul and body being pulled apart. I say temporary because then in the future there is the resurrection, where the soul and body are reunited. And that is the state that we are meant to be. We're meant to be in a state where soul and body are together. When the soul leaves the body, that is what death is. The Jews, for every utterance Hashem said, their souls left their bodies. They were literally drawn to Hashem. So what we have over here is a fascinating thing. The soul and body, the hybrid of the soul and the body, is hearing the utterances of Hashem. When that happens, the body is blown backwards, the soul is drawn forward. That's what was happening with each utterance Hashem said. The soul, hearing Hashem, just yearned to be with Hashem and just jumped out of the body to go to Hashem. The body was terrified and jumped backwards. And that's death. And the Gemara says that Hashem sent a whole group of angels, and the angels then took the souls and put them back in the bodies and helped the people back to where they should be, standing at the foot of Har Sinai, until the next utterance, in which case they were blown away again. And the same thing happened. And then they were put back where they were supposed to be. That's what was happening to the people as Har Sinai, this experience of Har Sinai, was going on. You can see why this was a very terrifying experience. This is something which no one has ever experienced before then or since. And a couple of million people going through this. It's a very, very frightening experience. It's something which completely changes your whole perception of everything.
Yeah, I've also heard that all future souls also were there.
Yeah, so it says that all future souls were there, which means we were all present there, but the future souls didn't have bodies.
Right.
So we wouldn't have gone through this experience that they went through of the soul and body being pulled apart and then being reunited and pulled apart. Yeah.
Wasn't only the first two dibros?
Yes.
And after the first two.
Yes. So after the first two.
They were so small, they wanted to hear from him.
After the first two, we couldn't handle it. We handled it for two of the ten, and then we couldn't handle it anymore. And remember that we said in the beginning of the Asesh Dibros, first Hashem said all ten simultaneously. We did hear all ten from Hashem at the same moment. Then Hashem started saying them one at a time. And we were able to withstand the first two, and then we couldn't handle it anymore. And at that point, we said to Moshe, we can't do this anymore. You speak to Hashem. So Moshe clearly is demonstrating how he's able to handle it. And we know this from later on in the Chumash. Hashem speaks to Moshe. Peh el peh, mouth to mouth. Panim befanim, face to face. There's a conversation between Hashem and Moshe. Moshe does not get scared in the manner that everybody else does. He's able to have a conversation with Hashem, like that the Torah itself says, Ka'asher yedaber ish el reyehu, like a man speaks to his friend. It's just a conversation. He was able to do that. The Torah itself says, though, later on, that Moshe will ask Hashem to see Hashem's honor. Hareini nas kvodecha, show me your honor. To which Hashem says, Lo yirani ha'adam v'chai, no man can see me and live. Now again, whatever that means, Hashem doesn't have a body to see. But whatever it is that is visible, that one could see in theory, Hashem says, you can't see that and live. The people couldn't even hear Hashem and live. Moshe was able to hear Hashem and live. But Hashem says to Moshe, even you can't see me and live. That you can't do. That's not going to work. Even for you. That's impossible. But Moshe was able to hear Hashem and live. We couldn't even hear him and live. That was not possible. Now remember that this is now a 180-degree turnaround from what the Jews wanted back on the third day of Sivan. You'll recall that on the third day of Sivan, the Jews were told that Hashem is going to speak to Moshe, and the Jews will listen in as Hashem speaks to Moshe. And we Jews said to Moshe, Moshe, we don't want that. We want to hear directly from Hashem. Moshe went back upstairs, and Hashem said to Moshe, that's a good thing. Tell them that's a good thing. So they should hear from me directly. And that's why we had to separate from our spouses, and that's why there was a delay of another 2 or 3 days before Har Sinai. And now it was time to get the Torah, and now the Jews were getting what they asked for, which is direct communication from Hashem in the manner that Moshe gets spoken to. For these two dibros, these two utterances of Hashem, we were all Moshe. Where normally Moshe's prophecy is on a plane that no one else can experience, everybody else, all of the prophets, their prophecies are diminished, but Moshe's is on a higher plane. For the first two utterances of the Aseret HaDibros, we were all Moshe. We were all able to hear exactly like him, directly from Hashem. And that's what we asked for. That's what we wanted. And we got it. And we couldn't handle it. Because at the end of the day, we're not Moshe. We wanted to be like Moshe, but at the end of the day, when you artificially become Moshe, you can't handle it. And so we couldn't handle it. And therefore we said to Moshe Rabbeinu, we can't take it, you do it. We're going to see later on that this troubled Moshe greatly. It doesn't say it over here, it says it in Parashas Va'eschanan, when the Aseret HaDibros are repeated, Moshe over there says, when you said you don't want to hear straight from Hashem anymore, I was very bothered by that. Because now you're rejecting Hashem. It's one thing if you never had the experience in the first place. That's fine. But now that you asked for it and you got it and then you rejected Hashem, how can you do anything worse than that? It's like slapping God in the face, kiviyachol, if that were possible. How could you do that? However, Moshe says later on, Hashem said to me, no, it's good. It's proper, and it's good that the Jews have realized they cannot hear me directly, and it's a good thing. In this way, the fear of God will always be with the Jewish people, and therefore it's a good thing that they now have changed their minds. The experience was overall a good thing. This is the exchange between Moshe and the people over here in with the Aseret HaDibros. And so, Moshe says to the people, as we read in Pasuk Tes Zion, verse 16, that Moshe said, the people said to Moshe, you speak to Hashem, we will hear, and let Hashem not speak to us, lest we die. So Moshe said to the people, don't be afraid, because this is, well, Hashem did this for a good reason. He did it in order to elevate you. People should look at you and respect you, because Hashem spoke to you. And in order that you always fear Hashem. And the nation stood from afar, and Moshe approached the thick cloud in which was Hashem. Okay, so we have a few more verses left to finish Parshas Yisro, and we are going to tackle that Mir Hashem next time. And the thing we're going to have to deal with now is, how do you follow up the Aseres HaDibros? Right? You just had the Ten Commandments. You just had this unbelievable experience, this intense experience. What next? These next few verses, it's only how many left? We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 more left till the end of the parsha. They must be really, really important. I mean, what else could, I mean, something to follow up the Aseres HaDibros. When we read it, we're going to see, we're going to wonder, this is what followed the Aseres HaDibros? I mean, okay, every word in the Torah is precious, but why these verses? That's part of what we're going to have to discuss next time. For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. He does not make money off the site, but he does need money in order to run the site. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.